Chapter 52. Of the quarrel that Don Quixote had with the goatherd, together with the rare adventure of the penitents, which with an expenditure of sweat he brought to a happy conclusion. The goatherd's tale gave great satisfaction to all the hearers, and the canon especially enjoyed it, for he had remarked with particular attention the manner in which it had been told, which was as unlike the manner of a clownish goatherd as it was like that of a polished city wit. And he observed that the curate had been quite right in saying that the wits bred men of learning. They all offered their services to Eugenio, but he who showed himself most liberal in this way was Don Quixote, who said to him, "Most assuredly, brother goatherd, if I found myself in a position to attempt any adventure, I would, this instant, set out on your behalf, and would rescue Leandra from that convent, where no doubt she is kept against her will, in spite of the abbess and all who might try to prevent me, and would place her in your hands, to deal with her according to your will and pleasure, observing, however, the laws of chivalry which lay down that no violence of any kind is to be offered to any damsel. But I trust in God our Lord, that the might of one malignant enchanter may not prove so great, but that the power of another better disposed may prove superior to it, and then I promise you my support and assistance, as I am bound, to do by my profession, which is none other than to give aid to the weak and needy." The goatherd eyed him, and noticing Don Quixote's sorry appearance and looks, he was filled with wonder, and asked the barber, who was next him, "Señor, who is this man who makes such a figure, and talks in such a strain?" "Who should it be," said the barber, "but the famous Don Quixote of La Mancha, the undoer of injustice, the righter of wrongs, the protector of damsels, the terror of giants, and the winner of battles." "That," said the goatherd, "sounds like what one reads in the books of the knights errant, who did all that you say this man does, though it is my belief that either you are joking, or else this gentleman has empty lodgings in his head." "You are a great scoundrel," said Don Quixote, "and it is you who are empty and a fool. I am fuller than ever was the whoreson bitch that bore you." And passing from words to deeds, he caught up a loaf that was near him, and sent it full in the goatherd's face, with such force, that he flattened his nose. But the goatherd, who did not understand jokes, and found himself roughly handled in such good earnest, paying no respect to carpet, tablecloth, or diners, sprang upon Don Quixote, and seizing him by the throat with both hands, would no doubt have throttled him, had not Sancho Panza that instant come to the rescue, and grasping him by the shoulders, flung him down on the table, smashing plates, breaking glasses, and upsetting and scattering everything on it. Don Quixote, finding himself free, strove to get on top of the goatherd, who, with his face covered with blood, and soundly kicked by Sancho, was on all fours feeling about for one of the table knives to take a bloody revenge with. The canon and the curate, however, prevented him, but the barber so contrived it that he got Don Quixote under him, and rained down upon him such a shower of fisticuffs that the poor knight's face streamed with blood as freely as his own. The canon and the curate were bursting with laughter, the officers were capering with delight, and both the one and the other hissed them on as they do dogs that are worrying one another in a fight. Sancho alone was frantic, for he could not free himself from the grasp of one of the canon's servants, who kept him from going to his master's assistance. At last, while they were all, with the exception of the two bruisers who were mauling each other, in high glee and enjoyment, they heard a trumpet sound a note, so doleful that it made them all look in the direction whence the sound seemed to come. But the one that was most excited by hearing it was Don Quixote, who, though sorely against his will he was under the goatherd, and something more than pretty well pummeled, said to him, "Brother devil, for it is impossible but that thou must be one, since thou hast had might and strength enough to overcome mine, I ask thee to agree to a truce for but 1 hour, for the solemn note of yonder trumpet that falls on our ears seems to me to summon me to some new adventure. The goatherd, who was by this time tired of pummeling and being pummeled, released him at once, and Don Quixote, rising to his feet, and turning his eyes to the quarter where the sound had been heard, suddenly saw coming down the slope of a hill several men clad in white like penitents. The fact was that the clouds had that year withheld their moisture from the earth, and in all the villages of the district they were organizing processions, rogations, and penances, imploring God to open the hands of His mercy, and send the rain. And to this end the people of a village that was hard by were going in procession to a holy hermitage there was on one side of that valley. Don Quixote, when he saw the strange garb of the penitents, without reflecting how often he had seen it before, took it into his head that this was a case of adventure, and that it fell to him alone as a knight errant to engage in it. And he was all the more confirmed in this notion by the idea that an image draped in black they had with them was some illustrious lady that these villains and discourteous thieves were carrying off by force. As soon as this occurred to him, he ran with all speed to Rocinante, who was grazing at large, and taking the bridle and the buckler from the saddle bow, he had them bridled in an instant, and calling to Sancho for his sword he mounted Rocinante, braced his buckler on his arm, and in a loud voice exclaimed to those who stood by, "Now, noble company, ye shall see how important it is that there should be knights in the world professing the of knight-errantry. Now, I say, ye shall see, by the deliverance of that worthy lady who is born captive there, whether knights-errant deserve to be held in estimation." And so saying he brought his legs to bear on Rocinante, for he had no spurs and at a full canter, for in all this voracious history we never read of Rocinante fairly galloping set off to encounter the penitents, though the curate, the canon, and the barber ran to prevent him. But it was out of their power, nor did he even stop for the shouts of Sancho calling after him, "Where are you going, Señor Don Quixote? What devils have possessed you to set you on against our Catholic faith? Plague take me, mind, that is a procession of penitents, and the lady they are carrying on that stand there is the blessed image of the Immaculate Virgin. Take care what you are doing, Señor, for this time it may be safely said you don't know what you are about." Sancho labored in vain, for his master was so bent on coming to quarters with these sheeted figures and releasing the lady in black, that he did not hear a word, and even had he heard, he would not have turned back, if the king had ordered him. He came up with the procession and reined in Rocinante, who was already anxious enough to slacken speed a little, and in a hoarse, excited voice he exclaimed, "You who hide your faces, perhaps because you are not good subjects, pay attention and listen to what I am about to say to you." The first to halt were those who were carrying the image, and one of the four ecclesiastics who were chanting the litany, struck by the strange figure of Don Quixote, the leanness of Rocinante, and the other ludicrous peculiarities he observed, said in reply to him, "Brother, if you have anything to say to us, say it quickly, for these brethren are whipping themselves, and we cannot stop, nor is it reasonable we should stop to hear anything, unless indeed it is short enough to be said in two words." "I will say it in one," replied Don Quixote, "and it is this, that at once, this instant, ye release that fair lady whose tears and sad aspect show plainly that ye are carrying her off against her will, and that ye have committed some scandalous outrage against her. And I, who was born into the world to redress all such like wrongs, will not permit you to advance another step until you have restored to her the liberty she pines for and deserves." From these words all the hearers concluded that he must be a madman, and began to laugh heartily, and their laughter acted like gunpowder on Don Quixote's fury, for drawing his sword without another word he made a rush at the stand. One of those who supported it, leaving the burden to his comrades, advanced to meet him, flourishing a forked stick that he had for propping up the stand when resting, and with this, He caught a mighty cut. Don Quixote made at him that severed it in two. But with the portion that remained in his hand, he dealt such a thwack on the shoulder of Don Quixote's sword arm which the buckler could not protect against the clownish assault that poor Don Quixote came to the ground in a sad plight. Sancho Panza, who was coming on close behind puffing and blowing, seeing him fall, cried out to his assailant not to strike him again, for he was poor enchanted knight, who had never harmed anyone all the days of his life. But what checked the clown was not Sancho's shouting, but seeing that Don Quixote did not stir hand or foot, and so, fancying he had killed him, he hastily hitched up his tunic under his girdle, and took to his heels across the country like a deer. By this time all Don Quixote's companions had come up to where he lay. But the processionists, seeing them come running, and with them the officers of the Brotherhood with their crossbows, apprehended mischief, and clustering round the image, raised their hoods, and grasped their scourges, as the priests did their tapers, and awaited the attack, resolved to defend themselves, and even to take the offensive against their assailants if they could. Fortune, however, arranged the matter better than they expected. For all Sancho did was to fling himself on his master's body, raising over him the most doleful and laughable lamentation that ever was heard, for he believed he was dead. The curate was known to another curate who walked in the procession, and their recognition of one another set at rest the apprehensions of both parties. The first then told the other in two words who Don Quixote was, and he and the whole troop of penitents went to see if the poor gentleman was dead, and heard Sancho Panza saying, with tears in his eyes, "O flower of chivalry, that with one blow of a stick hast ended the course of thy well-spent life! O pride of thy race, honor and glory of all La Mancha, nay, of all the world, that for want of thee will be full of evil-doers, no longer in fear of punishment for their misdeeds! O thou, generous above all the Alexanders, since for only 8 months of service thou hast given me the best island the sea girds or surrounds. Humble with the proud, haughty with the humble, encounterer of dangers, endurer of outrages, enamored without reason, imitator of the good, scourge of the wicked, enemy of the mean, in short, knight-errant, which is all that can be said." At the cries and moans of Sancho, Don Quixote came to himself, and the first word he said was, "He who lives separated from you, sweetest Dulcinea, has greater miseries to endure than these. Aid me, friend Sancho, to mount the enchanted cart, for I am not in a condition to press the saddle of Rocinante, as this shoulder is all knocked to pieces." "That I will do with all my heart, senor," said Sancho, "and let us return to our village with these gentlemen, who seek your good, and there we will prepare for making another sally, which may turn out more profitable and creditable to us." "Thou art right, Sancho," returned Don Quixote. "It will be wise to let the malign influence of the stars which now prevails pass off." The canon, the curate, and the barber told him he would act very wisely in doing as he said. And so, highly amused at Sancho Panza's simplicities, they placed Don Quixote in the cart as before. The procession once more formed itself in order and proceeded on its road. The goatherd took his leave of the party. The officers of the Brotherhood declined to go any farther, and the curate paid them what was due to them. The canon begged the curate to let him know how Don Quixote did, whether he was cured of his madness or still suffered from it, and then begged leave to continue his journey. In short, they all separated, and went their ways, leaving to themselves the curate and the barber, Don Quixote, Sancho Panza, and the good Rocinante, who regarded everything with as great resignation as his master. The carter yoked his oxen and made Don Quixote comfortable on the truss of hay, and at his usual deliberate pace took the road the curate directed, and at the end of 6 days they reached Don Quixote's village, and entered it about the middle of the day, which it so happened was a Sunday, and the people were all in the plaza, through which Don Quixote's cart passed. They all flocked to see what was in the cart, and when they recognized their townsman they were filled with amazement, and a boy ran off to bring the news to his housekeeper and his niece, that their master and uncle had come back all lean, and yellow and stretched on the truss of hay on an ox cart. It was piteous to hear the cries the two good ladies raised, how they beat their breasts and poured out fresh maledictions on those accursed books of chivalry, all which was renewed when they saw Don Quixote coming in at the gate. At the news of Don Quixote's arrival, Sancho Panza's wife came running, for she by this time knew that her husband had gone away with him as his squire, and on seeing Sancho, the first thing she asked him was if the ass was well. Sancho replied that he was, better than his master was. "Thanks be to God," said she, "for being so good to me. But now tell me, my friend, what have you made by your squirings? What gown have you brought me back? What shoes for your children?" "I bring nothing of that sort, wife," said Sancho, "though I bring other things of more consequence and value." "I am glad of that," returned his wife. "Show me these things of more value and consequence, my friend, for I want to see them to cheer my heart, that has been so sad and heavy all these ages that you have been away." "I will show them to you at home, wife," said Sancho. "Be content for the present, for if it please God that we should again go on our travels in search of adventures, you will soon see me a count or governor of an island, and that not one of those everyday ones, but the best that is to be had." "Heaven grant it, husband," said she, "for indeed we have need of it. But tell me, what's this about islands, for I don't understand it?" "Honey is not for the mouth of the ass," returned Sancho. "All in good time thou shalt see, wife, nay, thou wilt be surprised to hear thyself called your ladyship by all thy vassals." "What are you talking about, Sancho, with your ladyships, islands, and vassals?" returned Teresa Panza, for so Sancho's wife was called, though they were not relations, for in La Mancha it is customary for wives to take their husband's surnames. "Don't be in such a hurry to know all this, Teresa," said Sancho. "It is enough that I am telling you the truth, so shut your mouth. But I may tell you this much by the way, that there is nothing in the world more delightful than to be a person of consideration, squire to a knight errant, and a seeker of adventures. To be sure, most of those one finds do not end as pleasantly as one could wish, for out of 100, 99 will turn out cross and contrary. I know it by experience, for out of some I came blanketed, and out of others belabored. Still, for all that, it is a fine thing to be on the lookout for what may happen, crossing mountains, searching woods, climbing rocks, visiting castles, putting up at inns, all at free quarters, and devil take the Merovetti to pay." While this conversation passed between Sancho Panza and his wife, Don Quixote's housekeeper and niece took him in, and undressed him, and laid him in his old bed. He eyed them askance, and could not make out where he was. The curate charged his niece to be careful to make her uncle comfortable, and to keep a watch over him lest he should make his escape from them again, telling her what they had been obliged to do to bring him home. On this the pair once more lifted up their voices, and renewed their maledictions upon the books of chivalry, and implored heaven to plunge the authors of such lies and nonsense into the midst of the bottomless pit. They were, in short, kept in anxiety and dread lest their uncle and master should give them the slip the moment he found himself somewhat better, and as they feared, so it fell out. But the author of this history, though he has devoted research and industry to the discovery of the deeds achieved by Don Quixote in his third sally, has been unable to obtain any information respecting them, at any rate derived from authentic documents, tradition is merely preserved in the memory of La Mancha, the fact that Don Quixote, the third time he sallied forth from his home, betook himself to Saragossa, where he was present at some famous jousts which came off in that city, and that he had adventures there worthy of his valor and high intelligence. Of his end and death he could learn no particulars, nor would he have ascertained it or known of it, if good fortune had not produced an old physician for him who had in his possession a leaden box, which, according to his account, had been discovered among the crumbling foundations of an ancient hermitage that was being rebuilt, in which box were found certain parchment manuscripts in Gothic character, but in Castilian verse, containing many of his achievements, and setting forth the beauty of Dulcinea, the form of Rosinante, the fidelity of Sancho Panza, and the burial of Don Quixote himself, together with sundry epitaphs and eulogies on his life and character. But all that could be read and deciphered were those which the trustworthy author of this new and unparalleled history here presents. And the said author asks of those that shall read it nothing in return for the vast toil which it has cost him in examining and searching the Manchegan archives in order to bring it to light, save that they give him the same credit that people of sense give to the books of chivalry that pervade the world and are so popular. For with this, he will consider himself amply paid and fully satisfied, and will be encouraged to seek out and produce other histories, if not as truthful, at least equal in invention, and not less entertaining. The first words written on the parchment found in the leaden box were these: "The Academicians of Argamasilla, a village of La Mancha, on the life and death of Don Quixote of La Mancha, hoc scripta erunt Monicongo, Academician of Argamasilla." On the tomb of Don Quixote epitaph the Scaturbra in that gave La Mancha more rich spoils than Jason's, who a point so keen had to his wit, and happier far had been if his wit's weathercock a blunter bore, the arm renowned far as Jeddah's shore, Cathay, and all the lands that lie between, the muse discreet and terrible in mien as ever rode on brass in days of yore, he who surpassed the Amadises all, and who was not the Galaor's accounted, supported by his love and gallantry, who made the Belianises sing small, and sought renown on Rosinante mounted, here, underneath this cold stone, doth he lie. Peñaguado, Academician of Argamasilla, in laudum Dulcinea del Toboso, sonnet she, whose full features may be here descried, high-bosomed, with a bearing of disdain, is Dulcinea, she for whom in vain the great Don Quixote of La Mancha sighed. For her, Toboso's queen, from side to side he traversed the grim Sierra, the champaign of Aranjuez, and Montiel's famous plain, on Rosinante oft a weary ride. Malignant planets, cruel destiny, pursued them both, the fair Manchegan dame, and the unconquered star of chivalry. Nor youth nor beauty saved her from the claim of death. He paid love's bitter penalty, and left the marble to preserve his name. Caprichoso, a most acute academician of Argamasilla, in praise of Rosinante, steed of Don Quixote of La Mancha, sonnet on that proud throne of diamantine sheen, which the blood-reeking feet of Mars degrade, the mad Manchegan's banner now hath been by him in all its bravery displayed. There hath he hung his arms and trenchant blade wherewith, achieving deeds till now unseen, he slays, lays low, cleaves, hews, but art hath made a novel style for our new paladin. If Amadis be the proud boast of Gaul, if by his progeny the fame of Greece through all the regions of the earth be spread, great Quixote crowned in grim Bellona's hall today exalts La Mancha over these, and above Greece or Gaul she holds her head. Nor ends his glory here, for his good steed doth Brillador and Bayard far exceed, as mettled steeds compared with Rosinante, the reputation they have won is scanty. Brillador, Academician of Argamasilla, on Sancho Panza. Sonnet: the worthy Sancho Panza here you see, a great soul once was in that body small, nor was there squire upon this earthly ball so plain and simple, or of guile so free. Within an ace of being crowned was he, and would have been but for the spite and gall of this vile age, mean and liberal, that cannot even let a donkey be. For mounted on an ass, excuse the word, by Rosinant's sight this gentle squire was wont his wandering master to attend. Delious of hopes that lure the common herd with promises of ease, the heart's desire, in shadows, dreams, and smoky always end. Cachidiablo, academician of Argamasilla, on the tomb of Don Quixote epitaph. The knight lies here below, ill-errant and bruised sore, whom Rosinant bore in his wanderings to and fro. By the side of the knight is laid stolid man Sancho too, than whom a squire more true was not in the esquire trade. Tiquitoc, academician of Argamasilla, on the tomb of Dulcinea del Toboso. Epitaph: here Dulcinea lies. Plump was she and robust, now she is ashes and dust, the end of all flesh that dies. A lady of high degree, with the port of a lofty dame, and the great Don Quixote's flame, and the pride of her village was she. These were all the verses that could be deciphered. The rest, the writing being worm-eaten, were handed over to one of the academicians, to make out their meaning conjecturally. We have been informed that at the cost of many sleepless nights and much toil he has succeeded, and that he means to publish them in hopes of Don Quixote's third sally. Force ultro cantira con miglior plectro. Dedication of Part 2 to the Count of Lemos. These days past, when sending your excellency my plays, that it appeared in print before being shown on the stage, I said, if I remember well, that Don Quixote was putting on his spurs to go and render homage to your excellency. Now I say that with his spurs, he is on his way. Should he reach destination, methinks I shall have rendered some service to your excellency, as from many parts I emerged to send him off, so as to dispel the loathing and disgust caused by another Don Quixote who, under the name of Second Part, has run masquerading through the whole world. And he who has shown the greatest longing for him has been the great Emperor of China, who wrote me a letter in Chinese a month ago, and sent it by a special courier. He asked me, or to be truthful, he begged me to send him Don Quixote, for he intended to found a college where the Spanish tongue would be taught, and it was his wish that the book to be read should be the history of Don Quixote. He also added that I should go and be the rector of this college. I asked the bearer if His Majesty had afforded a sum in aid of my travel expenses. He answered, no, not even in thought. Then, brother, I replied, you can return to your China, post haste or at whatever haste you are bound to go, as I am not fit for so long a travel, and, besides being ill, I am much without money, while emperor for emperor and monarch for monarch, I have at Naples the great Count of Lemos, who, without so many petty titles of colleges and rectorships, sustains me, protects me and does me more favor than I can wish for. Thus I gave him his leave, and I beg mine from you, offering your excellency the Trabajos de Persils y Sigismunda, a book I shall finish within 4 months, Dio volant, and which will be either the worst, or the best, that has been composed in our language, I mean of those intended for entertainment, at which I repent of having called it the worst, for, in the opinion of friends, it is bound to attain the summit of possible quality. May your excellency return in such health that is wished you. Persils will be ready to kiss your hand, and I your feet, being as I am, your excellency's most humble servant. From Madrid, this last day of October of the year 1615. At the service of your excellency. Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra, the author's preface. God bless me. Gentler it may be, plebeian reader, how eagerly must thou be looking forward to this preface, expecting to find there retaliation, scolding, and abuse against the author of the second Don Quixote, I mean him who was, they say, begotten at Tordesillas and born at Tarragona. Well, the truth is, I am not going to give thee that satisfaction. 4. Though injuries stir up anger in humbler breasts, in mind the rule must admit of an exception. Thou wouldst have me call him ass, fool, and malapert, but I have no such intention. Let his offense be his punishment, with his bread, let him eat it, and there's an end of it. What I cannot help taking amiss is that he charges me with being old and one-handed, as if it had been in my power to keep time from passing over me, or as if the loss of my hand had been brought about in some tavern, and not on the grandest occasion the pastor present has seen, or the future can hope to see. If my wounds have no beauty to the beholder's eye, they are, at least, honorable in the estimation of those who know where they were received. For the soldier shows to greater advantage dead in battle than alive in flight, and so strongly is this my feeling, that if now it were proposed to perform an impossibility for me, I would rather have had my share in that mighty action, than be free from my wounds this minute without having been present at it. Those the soldier shows on his face and breast are stars, that direct others to the heaven of honor and ambition of merited praise. And moreover it is to be observed, that it is not with gray hairs that one writes, but with the understanding, and that commonly improves with years. I take it amiss too, that he calls me envious, and explains to me, as if I were ignorant, what envy is. For really and truly, of the two kinds there are, I only know that which is holy, noble, and high-minded. And if that be so, as it is, I am not likely to attack a priest, above all if, in addition, he holds the rank of familiar of the holy office. And if he said what he did on account of him on whose behalf it seems he spoke, he is entirely mistaken, for I worship the genius of that person, and admire his works and his unceasing and strenuous industry. After all, I am grateful to this gentleman, the author, for saying that my novels are more satirical than exemplary, but that they are good, for they could not be that, unless there was a little of everything in them. I suspect thou wilt say, that I am taking a humble line, and keeping myself too much within the bounds of my moderation, from a feeling, that additional suffering should not be inflicted upon the sufferer, and that what this gentleman has to endure, must doubtless be very great, as he does not dare to come out into the open field and broad daylight, but hides his name and disguises his country, as if he had been guilty of some lese majesty. If perchance thou shouldst come to know him, tell him from me, that I do not hold myself aggrieved. For I know well, what the temptations of the devil are, and that one of the greatest is putting it into a man's head, that he can write, and print a book by which he will get as much fame as money, and as much money as fame. And to prove it, I will beg of you, in your own sprightly, pleasant way, to tell him this story. There was a madman in Seville who took to one of the drollest absurdities, and vagaries that ever madman in the world gave way to. It was this: he made a tube of reed sharp at one end, and catching a dog in the street, or wherever it might be, he with his foot held one of its legs fast, and with his hand lifted up the other, and as best he could fixed the tube where, by blowing, he made the dog as round as a ball, then holding it in this position, he gave it a couple of slaps on the belly, and let it go, saying to the bystanders, and there were always plenty of them, "Do your worships think, now, that it is an easy thing, to blow up a dog? Does your worship think now, that it is an easy thing to write a book?" And if this story does not suit him, you may, dear reader, tell him this one, which is likewise of a madman and a dog. In Cordova there was another madman, whose way it was to carry a piece of marble slab or a stone, not of the lightest, on his head, and when he came upon any unwary dog he used to draw close to him, and let the weight fall right on top of him, on which the dog in a rage, barking, and howling, would run three streets without stopping. It so happened, however, that one of the dogs he discharged his load upon was a capmaker's dog, of which his master was fond. The stone came down hitting it on the head. The dog raised a yell at the blow. The master saw the affair and was wroth, and snatching up a measuring yard rushed out at the madman, and did not leave a sound bone in his body, and at every stroke he gave him he said, "You dog, you thief, my lurcher. Don't you see, you brute, that my dog is a lurcher?" And so, repeating the word lurcher again and again, he sent the madman away beaten to a jelly. The madman took the lesson to heart, and vanished, and for more than a month never once showed himself in public. But after that he came out again with his old trick, and a heavier load than ever. He came up to where there was a dog, and examining it carefully without venturing to let the stone fall, he said, "This is a lurcher. Where?" In short, all the dogs he came across, be they mastiffs or terriers, he said were lurchers, and he discharged no more stones. Maybe it will be the same with this historian, that he will not venture another time to discharge the weight of his wit in books, which, being bad, are harder than stones. Tell him, too, that I do not care a farthing for the threat he holds out to me of depriving me of my profit by means of his book, for, to borrow from the famous interlude of the Parandenga, I say in answer to him, long life to my lord the Vainte Quattro, and Christ be with us all. Long life to the great Khan de Limos, whose Christian charity and well-known generosity support me against all the strokes of my cursed fortune. And long life to the supreme benevolence of His Eminence of Toledo, Don Bernardo de Sandoval y Rojas. And what matter, if there be no printing presses in the world, or if they print more books against me than there are letters in the verses of Mingo Revulgo? These two princes, unsought by any adulation or flattery of mine, of their own goodness alone, have taken it upon them to show me kindness and protect me, and in this, I consider myself happier and richer than if fortune had raised me to her greatest height in the ordinary way. The poor man may retire in honor, but not the vicious. Poverty may cast a cloud over nobility, but cannot hide it altogether. And as virtue of itself sheds a certain light, even though it be through the straits and chinks of penury, it wins the esteem of lofty and noble spirits, and in consequence their protection. Thou needst say no more to him, nor will I say anything more to thee, save to tell thee to bear in mind, that this second part of Don Quixote which I offer thee is cut by the same craftsman, and from the same cloth as the first, and that in it, I present thee Don Quixote continued, and at length dead and buried, so that no one may dare to bring forward any further evidence against him, for that already produced is sufficient. And suffice it, too, that some reputable person should have given an account of all these shrewd lunacies of his without going into the matter again. For abundance, even of good things, prevents them from being valued. And scarcity, even in the case of what is bad, confers a certain value. I was forgetting to tell thee, that thou mayest expect the Persils, which I am now finishing, and also the second part of Galatea.